Our next speaker is Whitney Piles from CARE, the USA headquarters for the organization, and she will be talking on community-based surveillance models for avian influenza. Whitney.
Hello. Hi, I'm Whitney, and I'm from CARE USA. I'm the Avian and Pandemic Influenza Coordinator. I'm a little bit under the weather today, and my voice, I'm starting to lose it a little bit, so I'm going to try to rely on the microphone, but please bear with me. So today I'm going to share a little bit about our community-based surveillance models for avian influenza, particularly in Vietnam, where we've just conducted our first evaluation. I have no personal financial or commercial interest to disclose. Just as a little bit of background, CARE started our work in avian influenza in 2004 in prevention and response. We noticed a persistent gap at the community level for surveillance and reporting, and so in 2006 we began to pilot models of community-based surveillance in a number of countries supported by CDC. Unfortunately, due to time constraints, I won't be able to go too in-depth into the model, but basically the model that we're using in Vietnam is an active model for surveillance that sends volunteers out going house to house looking for suspected cases of avian influenza, encouraging people to report to relevant local authorities if there are any suspected cases in poultry or in humans, and also encouraging behavior change in sanitation and hygiene behaviors and also poultry raising techniques. This model uses the mass organizations in Vietnam, such as the Women's Union, the Farmers Association, the Youth Union, Veterans Association, to address basically a gap in human resources in the surveillance system. As you can see, there's very few human or animal health workers for households in the community. Most of them do not do that type of work full time. A lot of times they have another business that they have to attend to. So it's not really possible to get out and do active models of community-based surveillance or spreading messages without some help from volunteer groups. For the evaluation methodology, again, sorry to be so short for time, but we'll be looking at a few slides showing the comparison of our intervention and our pilot model versus a control group. This was a joint evaluation done with independent consultants and evaluators, teams of experts from the government of Vietnam at national, provincial, and district level, and also CARE staff. And after we did the evaluation, we also had a joint review of findings with other actors in the country who were doing community-based surveillance type work, FAO and APT Associates in particular, and we also had other technical partners and donors working with us on suggestions for moving forward. So this, now we're getting into the results of our evaluation. The first slide and the second slide will be on knowledge change. This is the percentage of the households who actually know the different routes that H5N1 is transmitted from bird to bird. And you can see that knowledge improved in the intervention site for each of the indicators. And contact with infected birds, the last one, is one of the most crucial pieces of knowledge for people to understand how their poultry become infected with H5N1 from other birds. So the knowledge change in that is crucial. The second slide is on percentage of households knowing how AI is transmitted from birds to humans. And as you can see with the last indicator, contact with infected poultry, the control group was at 78%, showing that national campaigns have actually really done their work in people understanding some key messages. But national campaigns can't reach for all of the complicated messaging and behavior change that we're looking for in avian human influenza behaviors. So getting to behavior change, we're all very familiar with how difficult it is to affect behavior change. I think avian influenza is particularly difficult because you're asking people to change a number of behaviors, not just in human health and sanitation, but also in agriculture and livelihoods. So it's a real behavior change challenge. And we were very excited with the model to see substantial behavior change. This first slide is for percentage of households doing at least three behaviors to protect their family from avian influenza. And the second slide is for households doing at least 4 behaviors to protect their poultry from getting avian influenza. And just to give you an example of what some of those behaviors are for protecting their family, these were behaviors that households were changing in order to protect themselves and their families while slaughtering poultry. One of the things that I was glad to see a change in was washing hands after slaughtering poultry moved from, or in the control group it was only 29%, in the intervention it was 55%. I find in the field very often if you ask people what they do to protect themselves from avian flu, they'll find a pair of gloves or a mask and hold it up and never mention hand washing. So it's really important that those things remain in the forefront, and it's difficult to change behaviors related to very common measures such as hand washing. This was the most important aspect of our evaluation. The model was focused on encouraging people to report dead or sick poultry to relevant authorities. As our colleague just pointed out, some of the problems with that, there's an economic disincentive, so it was wonderful to see that we actually could make a substantial change in this behavior. So what this particular indicator shows, we asked households whether or not they had experienced a poultry death in the last year, and if so, what did they do? So in the control group, 72% actually reported to either their surveillance volunteer or to the local relevant authorities. That would be the community leaders, the animal health workers, the human health workers, whereas only 9% did in the control group. We also wanted to influence health-seeking behaviors because when humans contract avian influenza, it often looks like normal flu at the onset. So you can see in the control groups, or sorry, in the intervention communes, that 76% actually sought help at the commune health center or the district or provincial hospital versus the 63% of the control group that tried to self-treat at home. So that's a really important health-seeking behavior change for identifying cases early. So from the quantitative findings, we feel that we can say that the interpersonal communications and the surveillance network really did improve the reporting and the health-seeking behaviors for avian and human influenza. And we were also excited that the model showed success in improving behavior change for prevention techniques as well. For the qualitative findings, I'm just going to hit a few highlights. One of the things that we discovered was there was a bit of a gap in the way that we designed the model. When we designed this community-based surveillance model, we designed it to be an event-based model, meaning that during an outbreak, we defined exactly how we wanted the community to interact with the district-level government. But in the absence of the outbreak, we didn't define any information to go up and down from there. This is fairly common in event-based models where you don't want to overload the district-level local government with too much information or too many programs to be monitoring. But we found that the district level, in some cases, was interested in trying to integrate fully the whole community-based model into their formal surveillance system. And when that happens, you run the real risk of overburdening local government and the district without them necessarily realizing it. So we decided that at the outset, we had to decide exactly what type of information the local government really needed to be brought up to their attention in the absence of an outbreak. The second interesting point that came out was that volunteers had a lot of difficulty distinguishing between symptoms that they were learning about for avian influenza and the case definition. We're not really sure how important that is right now because we did get really good results for improving reporting. So is it really crucial that they be able to distinguish between the case definition and symptoms if we're doing a good job in getting those reports into the system, in the system? We're not sure, but we're looking at that. And the third finding that was quite interesting was that the roles and the responsibilities were sometimes not very clear. The volunteers understood what their job was, but we found the community had very high expectations of the volunteers. For instance, they might expect the volunteers to be able to diagnose avian influenza on the spot, which is impossible. You can't do that without a laboratory test. So those were some of the things that we realized needed a little bit more clarity in the community. So for recommendations for going forward in the model, we had three categories: targeting, sustainability, and integration. So for targeting, a community-based surveillance model that is as active and consumes as many human resources as the one in Vietnam does was never intended to be implemented in all communities. This is definitely a model for high-risk communities, and luckily in Vietnam now we have better predictive mapping of H5N1 risk. There was a paper in March put out in PNAS that did a great job describing a model that University of New Hampshire came up with to better predict risk of where H5N1 virus is. In addition to that type of research, we're also looking at qualitative profiling of areas where to implement this model. So these are some of the factors that we would look at. For example, areas where backyard farms are in close proximity to commercial farms is one area that we would consider high risk, and that the community-based surveillance model would be a good fit for. Other factors, duck-raising households, which move a lot, weak surveillance systems in that particular district or community, and also significant market activities. Another recommendation on targeting is that we should be using more participatory mapping, not only at the district and the community level to look at high-risk areas in their locality, but also with volunteers. Volunteers don't need to be visiting every household equally. There are going to be some households that are more high-risk than others due to their either market activities, due to the type of poultry they raise, due to where they raise their poultry. So looking at visiting those households more frequently in order to do better targeting. Recommendations on sustainability. One thing that we realized when we implemented this model and we're doing the evaluation is that this model could be used to suit two objectives. It could be used for a more active surveillance model that supports a zero reporting mechanism down to the village community level, or it could be used as a system to support the passive system, encouraging people to support the report to the passive system and encouraging behavior change within a community. And clearly it's not up to CARE as to what the objective is for that model. So engaging with local government at the onset to determine what their objective is. Is it the more active model or a more passive model? And different districts and provinces had different preferences on what their priorities were. And on integration with from the community-based system to the formal surveillance system, which often ends at the district level where our system begins, one of the recommendations that we need to carefully consider the paper trail that the volunteers are using, and that it doesn't get integrated fully into the district system without thought about what actually needs to be reported and when. So even though it's important to share information that the volunteers are collecting in the absence of an outbreak, the actual paperwork that the volunteers and the communities might be doing and using isn't the appropriate system. So I realized that was very quick. We have a series of case studies on our website that go more in depth, and I have two of the case studies in the back. The actual community-based surveillance for avian influenza in Vietnam, the experience, results, discussions, and recommendations, discusses our evaluation findings, and the promising practices for community-based surveillance discusses CARES models in a number of different countries around the world.
Thank you very much.